Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We will be at Costas Inn in Timonium on Thursday, following Thursday next week, the day of the draft, the 23rd. We will not be in Pittsburgh, although I offered to take Luke. I will be at Coco's Pub next Thursday, and then we will be at Pizza John's on the 1st in Essex. And now on the 7th of May, we're going to be at the Planet Fitness in Timonium. I'm looking forward to that. Got a special thing I'm doing that day. I will have the Maryland Treasures scratch off all four of them. I feel it's kind of neat with the art. Also, our friends at GBMC, I am walking a mile in their shoes on Friday at South Chapman, 4 p.m. Join me in Towson. Come walk. Support the folks over at GBMC and their SAFE program for sexual assault and abuse and awareness for something we don't talk about a lot around here. It's happening this Friday. Get on out, and the weather is going to be splendiferous, and it's going to exceed all expectations. And maybe you might need the AC, and if you do, Farnan and Dermer are your people. Luke's wearing the shirt. He's here now after a rare night of serendipity where things just worked out on Monday night to be, I guess if the team wins its 92 games, as has been predicted by yours truly, you'll look back and say, hey, that's one of those ones where, like, they got the fire started that night against the Diamondbacks who are wearing their pajamas.
It was memorable. I mean, it was one of those that, as we were standing in the post-game clubhouse waiting for Pete Alonso, one of the other reporters mentioned that felt a little more like 2023, first half of 2024. I mean, let's face it. First of all, Craig Albernez gets hit with a line drive in the face in the dugout, and then they fall behind 7-1. And, Dean Kramer had his moments, but also gives up 30 home runs, right? I mean, it was up and down. The defense didn't help him out. That led to one of those home runs, and two unearned runs with Gunnar Henderson pulling Pete Alonso off the bag. But they fall behind 7-1. Albert Suarez gives up a home run. You're thinking, okay, they're just kind of they're going to lose this game. Their manager's hurt, in addition to all the other players who are hurt.
That's 4 days in a row, by the way, if
And
you do the math.
lo and behold, they stage a comeback and they score what, eight unanswered runs. I mean, impressive.
Doesn't
It was
happen
really
often.
impressive.
It's
Wow.
you don't want to
And
fall
that's not the
behind
fourth.
7-1 every night,
I
but
was just
the
going to
fact that it
say, I mean,
happened means that it goes to Tug McGraw, right? You got to believe, right? And I don't know that I believe that. I don't know why I kept it on. It was, 8 o'clock on an otherwise nondescript Monday night when the weather was finally nice and I opened the windows and my cat was hanging out and I don't know, I stayed with it. I stayed with it and it got interesting quick because they loaded the bases and then I think of John Martin and Seth Elkin because the Grand Slam is worth 5 grand. So I have a little bit of fun with my lottery promotion with it in my own way. But ball jumped off the bat and next thing you know they're back in the game and then Alonso plays the hero and on cue really like right if you're writing the script of how this is going to go it's been a good couple of days in Birdland.
it has been, but I mean, let's give Jeremiah Jackson some oxygen here. I mean, this is someone that the Orioles brought in last year. You look at minor league free agents and guys of that nature where they're kind of cast off. He played really well at Triple A. He was part of the post deadline 2025 Orioles where they're playing out the string, but at the same time, there are some guys that are getting some opportunities that very well have a chance for next year or the year after that. And the Orioles traded Ramon Arias. Obviously, they moved on from Jorge Mateo in the offseason. And Jeremiah Jackson was one of those guys that, wasn't handed a job in spring training by any means. But this is a guy that's just gone out there and hit. I mean, he hit last August. He got himself on the radar with how he played last year down the stretch. And I mean, he's got some power. I mean, you could see it. I mean, both of those home runs, no doubt about it. So he's not a huge guy, but he's big enough. He's got pop in the bat. I think as much as we focused on the defensive struggles of this club, I think he's played a really nice second base, and some of the defensive metrics bear that out.
And
So
he's also a guy that they can throw in the outfield and hide for a couple innings if they needed to, in a general sense that he's an athlete. Dude, everything we talked about with Cobie Mayo, which is like, if you can hit the ball, We can figure out a place to play you as long as, even if you are a deficiency with the glove, if you can hit the ball, we're going to put you in a lineup. And on this team, especially at this pace and race with no Rutschman, no Westberg, no Holly, it's on and on and on and on. No O'Neal, the guy hits the ball, right? And I, and you only wish that Mayo were hitting like that, or Couser was hitting like that, or wherever it would be, but his defense, they'll hide him. He's fine. I mean, and versatile.
Well, like I said, I mean, his defense at second has been good. I mean, he wasn't great in the outfield last year. I mean, by any means, and really, it was the first time that he was kind of playing there in to an extended degree. So he's been. I mean, you just said it. For as much as we talk about the young core and prospects and draft picks and all of that, he's outperformed a lot of those guys. You're going back to last August. So. He's been really good, and it's been encouraging to see that. I mean, in the same way that we talked about Ramon Arias, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever he emerged, Jorge Mateo to a lesser extent, but certainly had his moments. But Jeremiah Jackson's doing a nice job. And as much as Pete Alonso had the big moment in terms of the go-ahead home run and obviously being the centerpiece of their offseason and being on the big contract, I mean, it was Jeremiah Jackson who got them back in the game with a long grand slam. So
Kind of
he's
reminds
been.
me a little bit of Laureano last year too, and sort of that, not one of the guys that was
Sure.
drafted that is whatever, but you look up and it's June and he's hitting 280 and he's got 10 home runs, and you're like, all right, he's doing better than Ryan Mountcastle, doing better than the rest of these guys, and Mountcastle now injured as well. But I'm just thinking of, like, other than Gunnar Henderson and the money they've spent on Pete Alonso, we do a lot of reaching around here. We do a lot of reaching. Basayo's breaking bats over his knee, and like it's hard to do. It's hard to do consistently for 1 year, 1 summer, 1 month, whatever, right? But all of these guys have had, we'll beat up on the Ravens later about their veterans that have made $100 million and haven't won playoff games, right? We talked about that a little bit with Minter. This is the other way around. This is like all of these underperforming or unavailable, injured, whatever it happens to be, or holes in their game that are so large that you wonder whether Couser will overcome that or not. But the guys that actually do it come from the side door. You know what I mean? Leody Tavares, you know what I mean? Like names that we see him in the offseason, we're like, where's that guy getting at bats? We got Couser's a first round draft pick. And, and they, I don't know. I mean, even the Ward thing. You think about where they'd be if we were running the team. We'd be screwing around with Grayson Rodriguez's shoulder, and Elias went for it and got a real major league player that's been stood out in the first month of the season. And out of all of these young guys, we're talking about Jeremiah Jackson, I don't know, for the fifth month in a row, right? Literally, right?
Well, I mean, I don't.
Started in
He
July last year, right?
August last
August,
year.
okay.
He's 26. He's 26. Just turned 26, right? So, as much as you kind of focus on those other guys, and understandably so, I mean, Jeremiah Jackson was in another organization, hadn't really gained any traction, right? And he comes to the Orioles, had a really good season in the minors last year to earn an opportunity after the trade deadline when they sell off the pieces that they sold off, and he's done nothing but take advantage to the point where he made the club. And now you're looking at it through the lens of he's playing a really good second base, and Jackson Holliday's hand is still doesn't seem like he's ready. Craig Albernaz said this week that, or said on Monday prior to getting hit with the line drive, but he said he doesn't expect him to be activated for the rest of this homestand. His rehab assignment is up later this week. So, what that means in terms of the next step is a little unclear to be determined. But in the meantime, and that's not to say that you don't want Jackson Holliday back as soon as possible, Jeremiah Jackson's doing a good job. I mean, he's second base. We could talk a lot about third base and Coby Mayo
He's a
not
top
hitting,
60 pick, man.
but.
Like, this is one of those Elias specials where, like, I liked him. I would have drafted him. We can help him. We can bring him into our system. We can give him a glove. We can give him instruction. We can make him a better hitter. We can make him a better ball player. Hey, man, Like, if Jackson Holliday can come up at 318 and knock in 11 runs first, 15, 20 games, perfect, right? I mean, that's it's been production and winning a ball game and all the things that Monday represented for whatever that North Star of hope for this to be a playoff team. It's like, hey guys, remember that night we were losing 7-1 and our manager took a line drive off his face and Suarez is out there just trying to soak up innings and we're just trying to like get through it so we can get better weather on Tuesday. And then we loaded the bases and hit a grand slam and then Pete hits one and then like it's a pretty memorable night. I mean, for the fans that were out there, I thought like, all right, this is what you. How could you see anything better in April? If they were winning 10-1 in the fourth inning, you'd feel good about them slugging and pitching and the Trevor Rogers, whatever that is. This is a different kind of adversity when you're getting your ass kicked and you win a game like that. Because that, I don't know, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, I mean it's not something they did very often at all last year. They did it a little bit at the end of the season when they were already out of it and they're just playing out the string. Of course, they had the kind of the miracle comeback the night that Yamamoto almost threw the no-hitter. But they didn't do those things last year. They didn't do those things in the second half of 2024, right? Where things went sideways and it just they really kind of regressed into this mediocre to bad outfit that they had been over the better part of the last year and a half. So to see this, to see the fact that, hey, let's look at this in terms of baby steps. I mean, they weren't even as much as 2 games over 500 last year, and they're at 2 games
Wow.
over 500. I mean,
Okay.
that speaks to it. The last time they were at 500 last year was the home opener. So it speaks to how badly things went so quickly for them. And let's face it, I mean, they're dealing with injuries right now. They're dealing with as many injuries right now as they did last year. They've
We
already
did an hour
shown.
on that Monday before the manager got hit in the face. Like,
I mean,
I they're
it's not something you like, but it is something you're going to have to deal with, and it is something you have to overcome if, and obviously they need to get healthier as the year goes on in terms of getting some of these guys back, and they will, but you're going to go through some adversity. You know that it's not going to be smooth sailing for 6 months in a 162 game season. They've gone through a lot already. I mean, heck, they were swept in Pittsburgh, and look at how they played since then, winning 6 of 7 and adding a comeback victory to the ledger, where I think it just makes everyone feel better. I think over the weekend, the fact that they won a series when they lost the first game, they find out that Adley Rutschman's on the IL, Tyler O'Neill's on the IL, Ryan Mountcastle breaks his foot and is on the 60-day IL, right? I mean, that's a lot to go through in a matter of a few days. It's really easy to feel sorry for yourself during a baseball season because, day after day, like you have to go right back and play the next day. And sometimes that can help, but other times that can make things worse where it really snowballs. So for them to
especially on the
show what, yeah, for them
bullpen.
to show what they've shown over the last week, I'm encouraged by that. I'm not getting ahead of myself in the same way that if they got off to a bad start, it still early
But they're
applies to
doing what good
both.
teams do when they've
Exactly.
had injuries and finding ways to win when they're losing 7-1. I mean,
And let's face it, I mean, it was a little cinematic that Craig Albernaz briefly returned to the dugout and gives Jeremiah Jackson a hug after he hits the grand slam. I mean, we didn't even mention it. Jackson was the one who hit him, right?
Oh,
It was
that's
his
right.
line
Yeah.
drive. So that was definitely, and Jackson even said after the game, it was, he admitted he was a little bit in a little bit of a fog for, I don't know, 30 minutes after that happened. 'Cause you're making sure that he's okay. And you don't want anyone to take a line drive to the face like that. You're worried about a concussion, broken jaw, whatever it is. But it sounds like Albernaz was doing well after the game. They were going to send him for a scan to make sure. You got to make sure concussion, all that.
I had a friend of
But
mine get hit in the face with a baseball
not
in
fun.
Chicago, line drive. I mean, had facial reconstruction. I mean, had to have certain,
Yeah.
like, it was a real serious thing.
Yeah. I mean, you
Off the
could see.
bat of Mookie Betts, no less.
Oof. I mean, you could see on the replay. I mean, it got him good. I mean, he tried to get out of the way. I mean,
Yeah, it's dangerous, man.
was a
You know?
legit line drive. I mean, have there been harder line drives in the dugout? Maybe,
Think about
but
the cool ball thing and just,
yeah,
just
sure.
different things through the course of history, Canigliero and just,
Yeah. I mean,
all of that.
this is why they put up the
Netting.
screens that they
Yeah.
do, the netting that they do. I mean, even the dugouts.
It's the
Remember, I mean,
first thing
once.
I notice as like an old guy that goes once or twice a year to the ballpark. Curio gave me tickets 2 years ago, and I took my buddies. We sat off the dugout against the Yankees. We heckled Soto and Aaron Judge. Not nearly as good as the chin music the other night when he hit the home run after getting like brushed back twice. But the first thing I noticed is the screen there, that it's such a different experience than my experience all of the years of heads up, don't take a line drive. And look, man, I went to so many baseball games, sat in so many different places, had balls landing around you, fans reaching over, giving contracts, screamers coming into the press box, which, man, I mean, that press box in the early 90s, I was there the night that it went into the television, destroyed Ken Rosenthal's laptop, glass shattering. I mean, just there, it's violent. A baseball coming at 90 miles an hour when you're that far away down at that level. I got hit in the side of the head with a bat when I was a kid in Little League or whatever, just like, and it always kind of freaked me out when I was down there watching BP during, like, with Greg Biagini at the cage or Chris Hoyles back in the day. Just, and spring training too, how much activity is going on with bats and balls and gloves and fungos and Cal Senior out there hitting them and whatever. And there was an energy about it to not get hit with a line drive, or when the bat came off the. People would, you'd always, hey, heads up, like all that sort of thing. There's no time for that in that dugout, man. It's dangerous what happened for Rob Long, for, any of them down there. It's, the netting's a good thing, I guess, but it's very noticeable to me when I go and I'm thinking, well, this kind of sucks looking through, fishnet the whole game. And literally, I think that every time I go, I'm like, well, this is kind of like being in a golf cage or something in some weird way. And I guess I never thought about it even in hockey. I mean, I saw awful, awful, awful stuff happen with pucks 30 years ago, and lawsuits, deaths, all the thing in Columbus. I mean, they have to do this, but there's no protecting Rob Long or Craig Albernaz or anybody that's in harm's way of a line drive like that. There's no time. And Ben McDonald spoke to it eloquently in that he sat in a lot of dugouts. He's like, there's no time. Like, there's no reaction time. You have to be on it, and you could still take it the wrong way.
I mean that's why they put up the screens and even in front of the dugout, right? I mean, years ago. I mean, for years the dugout was wide open, right?
Well, guys would
So
stand on the front of the cage, right?
I mean,
So,
it's
yeah.
it all of those examples, and I use this example talking about it a lot at training camp or with the Ravens. I mean, not that there's the level of danger standing on the sideline quite to that degree,
Well, there are
although
knees and ankles and getting wiped out.
but the point is
Yeah.
it's a reminder of just how fast the game actually is, right? You watch it on TV and you have no idea. When you're on the field or when you're right on the sideline like that, or you're right in the dugout, it is very fast. And there's only so much reaction time,
And when
right? So.
guys duck or move back out of a 88 mile an hour curveball, and that's not even, the 103 that you can see, but like, how fast the ball moves. And if you've been to a batting cage and just put a heater on 80 and try to get your bat around on it, it's amazing it doesn't happen more. That's all I say. And I say that from that backfield, all of the years that I did this professionally, sitting in dugouts doing a show back in the day, that it's amazing more bad stuff doesn't happen with baseballs and bats. And I saw Bourgeois, great name by the way, and he's got my favorite number, 36. I'm gonna get a current Oriole, a Bmore City Connect jersey. I can't wait for the Ravens rebranding. I would get a Bourgeois, but he took that television out there for the pickoffs, and I'm thinking, that's right in the area where like that television's gonna take a baseball into the back. It's just, but I. It's a bit of a symphony, and I know you're there early enough. You experience it in a way that fans really don't. I had that real experience as a young person to be out there during all of that. It baseball's moved fast, man, and these guys throw hard, and the ball's never straight, and I don't know. It's weird.
And it's a big reason why they have the screens and all they have out there for batting practice, and they have the netting. And I mean, let's face it, in this day and age, when you look into a group of people and 85% of them are looking like this, and I'm holding up
Right.
my phone right now, you have to have that netting. I mean, you just have to in this day and age. And I think I would say from my perspective, and obviously the press box having moved now, so I have a slightly different perspective. You do get used to the netting. I mean,
Oh, you do. Your
you
eyes
get used to
adjust.
it. So, but I mean, it's.
But when I went down there to the great seats that I had from Curio, Wendy Bronfontein, some like I walked down. I mean, they're right on the on deck circle for the visiting team on third base side, right above the dugout, like fourth row. And like the first thing I noticed was, oh, I'm gonna watch the whole game through the net. It didn't look like that on TV. You know what I mean? Like, and I said I watched the other 161 on TV. Or, well, not the Apple games, but you know where I am. But you know, Monday was memorable. Just back to
Was.
that, and we'll get on to Dean Kramer and all that. Luke Jones is here. It's all brought to you by Farnan and Dermer. We had some post-game sound from Pete Alonso as well. And yeah, I mean, I hope Albernaz is okay. And I just, it's dangerous. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think he is. In fact, I even noticed that his wife posted on Twitter, said this guy back in the dugout with a laughing emoji. I would assume her having that reaction suggests that he's going to be okay, right? I mean, they'll check him out a little bit more just to be safe. But I'd be a little based on kind of the tone of some of the post game and all of that. Be a little surprised if he's not in the dugout Tuesday night. I mean, we'll see. I mean, maybe they precautionary they keep him away for a day, but.
Dude, that time when Adam Jones inspired me to write the Peter Principles when I was on the field at Citi Field at the All-Star game, it's probably one of the last time. Well, I've had press passes. I mean, I don't know. But either way, I found myself on the field during the pregame of the All-Star game or the work. It was the game, I think, or maybe it was the workout. Either way, and Adam Jones was playing catch with, you know, seven other All-Stars, and I'm in the base path by the maybe by the third base coach's box. And I just remembered five baseballs going this way. And these are all start, like, and I'm still like, I'm my head's a little ducky just being in there because they play catch at 65 miles an hour, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, it's not the same game that you and I played as youth. It's not the same game as playing in high school.
Brady Anderson would back me up. He
I mean,
literally would take
yeah.
his arm and
Yeah.
shove me toward the dugout.
Yeah, I
You
mean,
know, like literally.
yeah, it's a fast game, and these guys are the absolute best in the world at doing it. And even the worst players on the team are the best ones from their community or where they grew up or wherever. I mean, it speaks to how fast the game is, and it also speaks to like you said, I mean, not to be fatalistic about it or anything like that, but Monday night's a reminder that some bad things can happen, and not with anyone being negligent or anything. Sometimes bad things just happen, right? So, but fortunately, Albernaz seemed to be okay.
The picture of the big strawberry on his cheek was like,
Oh yeah, I mean,
ouch.
I figured
Yeah.
he'll have a heck of a bruise and some swelling, I'm sure. I mean, there's
Yeah.
little doubt about that, but still, it was kind of a wild scene seeing him in the dugout and kind of a cool moment,
A
where he
wild
gives.
night, just all the way around. I mean, Kramer getting the start, getting beaten around a little bit, and Jeremiah Jack. I mean, look, man, I can sing the Oriole Magic song, say every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Oriole baseball. But the Alonso moment for him to have a little bit of a moment. And
Big.
look, I'll get into Don Rovac and Katie Griggs and Mark Fine and the fact that nobody's at the ballpark. But it's early and like whatever. But those are the kind of nights that make people want to come back.
Sure. I mean, what they announced, I think 10,289. I mean, those folks who were in the ballpark, and probably a lot of those fans are people who have partial season plans and season plans and what have you. But
They don't have a 13-game
I,
Sunday plan anymore, trust
yes, but
me.
I always remember, I mean, it always stands out to me, Buck Showalter saying this years ago. I mean, this is probably his first full year as Orioles manager. And I can't remember if it was Union Night or something. It was a night where they had a huge crowd, like a crowd that was a little bit bigger than what you would expect, given what the 2010, 2011 era Orioles were right before they got good. But he always made the comment that you want to play well because you want them to come back. And it was just such a
That
pragmatic.
was so Buck because he ran the
He
Diamondbacks. You
got
know what I
it.
mean?
He
He was at
got
a
it. That,
different
like
level than
those
being a ball
parts of the game,
coach.
he got
Yeah.
really well. I mean, say what you want about Buck in terms of Zach Britton in the wild card game, or the fact that Buck would politic behind the
Dude, I
scenes. I
feel
mean, there's that,
cheated that I
but
never really knew Buck in that era in that way. You know, I don't
yeah.
feel cheated about Minter in this way. If these people don't want to know me, F them. But Buck was one of those things like that's where the Peter thing
Right.
really, cost me. And I don't feel as bad. Adam Jones, if he wants to know me, he can call me, or any of Matt Wieters and those guys that I dealt with some of them and I met some of them. And I mean, Rodrigo Lopez lived in my building, so did Miguel Gonzalez. So like I saw those guys, and I knew Miguel Tejada, like those that era of player. But Buck's pre and post game always had some level of Sparky Anderson wisdom that I don't. I don't the Auburn has the it's hard for me to get through his accent a little bit and just the whole ball player part of his persona. It's a little bit Dan Campbell-y for me, right? As far as whether it's really CEO-ish, he doesn't feel CEO-ish at all. He feels like Rick Dempsey managing the team to me, and that's cool. And I would say this in the modern era, we don't know whether he's really how much he's managing and how much the computer's managing and
Right.
Elias and all that. So it's not like that. But I miss Buck's wisdom. Part of selling me the game. Sell
Yeah.
me the game, Like I thought Brian Roberts did a good job the other day. The Wags guy, I don't listen enough when I'm in the car. Sometimes Hollander, I'm a week and a half into this. But when the broadcasts are good and when Ben's on, and Kevin Brown's on, and Jim Palmer's on. That is, now that we've had John Miller come through last weekend. I put those pictures up for you, by the way. I hope you saw those, dude.
I did.
Me and
I
John
did.
Miller. Yeah, so I got to find the tape. I mean, it feels like it may have eluded me a little bit, but I really, Luke, they've treated me like trash. You go to the ballpark. You've been doing this for 20 years. I'm locked out. I've been doing this for 20 years. I've become very accustomed to watching it on television. I see the strike zone. I see the game better. I see the game differently than you do when you're at the game because you don't hear them call the game the way I do. I see the presentation of what they're trying to sell and like the pretty girls and the dogs at the game or the, whatever they're into, whatever hot dog they're selling or sponsor they're pushing or the whistler coming out and whistling and doing their thing. But my entire existence is not unlike your mother's, which is my Oriole experience is watching them on TV. And like, so they need to make that good, right? And it's not great. It's great because the Palmer, McDonald, and Brown are great. The rest of it is a work in motion on any given night. So the pregame, postgame, all of that. But that's my whole lens on the game. So the manager is the star of the show. As we used to say around here when Billick ran the show, Paul Kopelka, our general manager, would say it's like a presidential address when Billick speaks. Now, whether Minter ever gets to that point, I mean, Harbaugh was so full of bouja that running his press conference every I program the radio station and I look at it and say, do I want 12 minutes of John Harbaugh bullshitting me on in morning drive? I'd rather just put Luke and I on, or put me on with Lee Steinberg, or put me on with Brian Adams, guitarist, or Steve Miles, or any of the things where Laura Clary from GBMC, the things that are a part of our programming, the Albernaz part of their programming, not to sound too apprentice here, got to get their numbers up, but dude, the only way they're getting me to the ballpark, well, they're not getting, they need to be honest with me. Because they're not. That's going to get me to the ballpark. But to get my credit card and get me there, it's 80 degrees. I'd love to go down tonight. I saw it was like $14 tonight. It was $35 on Saturday night. That's not an invitation to come to the ballpark when it's $35. But I'm just saying, I watch the television and how it's presented and the pregame show, whether it's Melanie, Rob, whatever, it's here's what the manager had to say. And then Albernaz does his couple of minutes. This was a better television show when Buck was the manager. And I'm not saying like they need to make it a good television show. And Lord knows we're having the whole freaking country run that way. And the Ravens with their social media and their threads and all the Johnny Bravo that Michelle Andres is doing over there. I don't follow the Orioles like Pollyanna online, what the bird whistled at last night, what the splash guy's doing. I'm just not there. I'm at 4 hours a night of giving him my baseball time. Buck helps sell the game. And that, part of even my feelings for Al Bernaz and that his wife is clever and she's out on social media and whatever, that's a good like part of the hook of if they're going to win, these personalities of Alonzo waiting for the media well after the game Friday night and being what feels to me to be a good guy in the presentation of him and of these players. I've seen Jackson spoken a lot because he's winning ball games. It's a television show to me. That's all I'm saying to a lot of people. It's a television show. And that's all. I that's my little soliloquy on a night when I watched it on television, so did everybody else because there weren't that many people. But you better hope to hell there were a lot of people watching on television. I mean, I gave Don Rovac a free plug. I went out in the seventh inning and said, "Hey, if you turned it off, turn it back on because it's fun." And they're winning all of a sudden if you turned it off. At 8:15, turn it back on. It's 8:45, whatever time it was. So I don't know. I've monologued a lot, but that's my people ask me how I really feel. I sit here and watch it on TV every night like everybody else. I just want it to be good. It was good on Monday night. I'm glad I didn't turn it
Yeah.
off. My wife were here, she probably would have had some friggin' America's Best Talent, greatest thing, the dancing star, something, reality, something. Because like 7-1 would have been an invitation with my wife here. She was in Venice, Italy, not Florida. She would have had the remote saying, "Dude, it's 7-1." I'd be like, "Eh, F them." You know what I mean? Like, literally, it's easy to do. It really is. And
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I would say in response is I find Abernaz to be pretty interesting. I mean, I think he's knowledgeable. I know a lot of people haven't heard him extensively. I mean, heck,
I'd
I've
love to
only
sit and talk to him. They don't give me that opportunity,
well,
dude. So I'm just saying, like, lots of
I
people sit and talk
well
to me
I'm
long form. I get to know them. This is part of, hey, you're running a baseball franchise here. You're letting you in, not me in. You're not letting him really sit and talk to people. My whole purview on him is the 4.5 minutes Rob Long feed, literally, dude. And they mic these guys up in the dugout, and they Rob Long chases them in the dugout after they hit home runs. Like all that's weird to me and superfluous, and certainly not putting any of them in their best light in that moment. And I wouldn't want that gig. Certainly wouldn't want it for Rob Long. I wouldn't give that gig to you. I love you, and I wouldn't say go down and bug Mountcastle after he turned his ankle. And we're reporters. I just think I'm telling you, dude, I'm never giving him a nickel. I'm gonna watch it on TV. I just want it to be really good. And it's great when they win. It really is, but they're doing the hard sell. I mean, they're begging people for tickets and the Birdland. Yeah, I mean, all the commercials, it's all there. Cal Ripken making commercials, David Rubenstein, whatever it is that gets people out to the ballpark. That kind of excitement on Monday, man. Can't buy it. I mean, it was just a really mad, it was an Oriole magic night, I thought.
they have to win, and they won in dramatic fashion, and they've won 6 of 7, and it's been good to see that. I mean, it's they're off to a pretty solid start when you consider everything that's gone wrong in the midst of that solid start.
I'll take
And
it.
yeah, absolutely. And frankly, I'm not sure they're going to be truly firing on all cylinders to the level that they might be capable of for quite some time, given where they are health-wise. But the more you win now, the fewer games you have to win come August and September, right? And that's not to say you don't have to win plenty of games in August and September, but
Well, you're
that's how you have a
always
good
hoping that
season.
they're going to get better and there's going to be a cavalry and
Yeah.
that Westberg's going to have meaningful at bats in August
You
and
hope.
Jackson Holliday is going to be hitting 274 at the All-Star break and by then have 9 home runs and steal some bases and solidify things. But we could still be talking about Jeremiah Jackson and he ain't going to be hitting
Yeah, we
free
could be
agent
talking
all
about,
year. Yeah.
I mean, at this point in time, I mean, Jeremiah Jackson, he's playing second base for right now. We assume Holliday's going to be back here at some point in the not too distant future. I mean, I'm starting to have some questions about that. But that said, even if Jordan Westberg comes back, is he going to be playing third base? So Jeremiah Jackson, he's very much outplayed Cobie Mayo.
Well,
I mean,
dude, with
there's
a
no
new
close, no.
manager and new everything, what you used to be for Brandon Hyde, I don't care what the back of your bubblegum card says. I don't care
Yeah,
when
I
you
mean,
were drafted. I wasn't here. Like, dude, Are you up for two or three hits tonight? Are you going to not boot the ball around? Are you going to throw to the right base? And if you do that tonight, I'm going to give you a chance to do that tomorrow because I think they're being managed that way. They were last place team last year. They had six guys on the team from opening day. They're trying to get all these guys back. Every Kerstad, Mayo, Holiday, Westberg, these guys haven't contributed anything. I mean, literally, haven't contributed anything to this ball club right here, right now for Craig Albernaz. Jeremiah Jackson won him a game the other night. So,
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'll push back a little bit on that in the sense that it's still the same general manager in front office, and you even said it yourself. We all know that field manager, coaching staff, it's more middle management than they run the show from a baseball standpoint, right? We
but
understand
I don't know
that.
where the
But
loyalty to Kobe Mayo would be if he's
oh,
going to hit
sure.
135.
Oh, I mean, I think that applies for anyone. I mean,
Right.
ultimately, you got to play, you got to perform, you've got to be
Well,
able to
Mike
do the
Elias
job.
believes in all of these guys. That's why they're here.
But I would say this, you know, and this would lend itself to what you were just suggesting. It is a fresh perspective. It's fresh eyes on these guys. Something that Craig Albernaz sees is some might not be something that, you know, Tony Mancelino or Brandon Hyde thought, or you know, Jason Bourgeois as the first base coach and the outfield instructor might be seeing something different that previous, you know, the previous regime didn't see. So yeah, there's some of that going on, but some of it's also that, hey, it's early, right? I mean, we're just reaching mid-April now. There's a lot of baseball season left. There's a lot of opportunity on the roster right now when you consider they've had injuries everywhere. I mean, Zach Eflin in the rotation. Okay, Dean Kramer comes back. Kramer didn't pitch great on Monday night, right? I mean, missed some bats. I thought the splitter was good. Defense let him down in terms of that third home run that he gave up. So it wasn't an awful outing, but you want him to be better. But you also kind of think in the back of your mind, hey, even though the Eflin injury stunk, they got to see Brandon Young and Cade Povich make a spot start early in the season. And both those guys did well. That's something that you hope will, you know, that plants some seeds for helping out later in the season, you know, whether it's 2 weeks from now or 2 months
It's
from
weird
now.
though. Like the other day, I was listening to you and me in the car yesterday, and we talked about it. Sort of like you don't want them making too many starts, right? Even though
No,
they
I
felt
mean,
it
oh,
went
and
well,
right,
went
and
better
that's
than Dean Kramer went.
well, sure, and that's where I saw some of the reaction that I saw on Twitter. I mean, for whatever reason, and I don't want to pick on Orioles fans here too much because it's not all Orioles fans. We've talked about it though, like the lack of appreciation for Dean Kramer. And look, I'm not saying I would want Dean Kramer to start a playoff game for me. Let me be clear. I'm not saying he's a number one, a number two, a number three, right? He's a back half, back of the rotation kind of guy. But the complete lack of awareness of what he is and the value that he has been able to bring them over the last few years in terms of league average starter, and he posts up, led them in innings last year. And I get it, it was a lousy season last year. Everyone understands that. But the idea of, you know, because I saw some people questioning why would the franchise bring, you know, why would the Orioles bring back Dean Kramer and option Cade Povich? It's like, wait, so we're just going to judge Cade Povich off of, albeit a really good start on Sunday, but Cade Povich was a below replacement level starting pitcher last year. Dean Kramer was their leader in innings, right? So, like, let's not lose our heads. We always say it's early, and we generally say that to provide context for something that's not good, but we also have to remember when, you know, just like Jeremiah Jackson, great night on Monday night. Continue to play him by all means, especially because you're not getting nearly as much with the bat with Kobe Mayo or Blaze
The
Alexander
only
right
reason
now.
he's in
But
there is because of these injuries and
that
things. By the way,
said,
my cat has visited. She
yeah,
never
I
does
see
the
that.
show. She's being a little reluctant, but she never does the show. So I just want to give her FaceTime. So.
But the point is, you know, I'm guessing Jeremiah Jackson's not going to bat 318 and have a 545 slugging percentage all year, but at the same time, he's doing a nice job. And the thing with Cade Povich, because I saw some people ask, well, why didn't they put him in the bullpen? You don't want to put him in the bullpen right now. Maybe come August or September, if your rotation is solidified, do you want Cade Povich in the
Starter
bullpen then?
start, right?
I mean,
Yeah.
you want to have him stretched out. I mean, the last thing you want to do is put someone like him in the pen. He's not getting as frequent work, And then suddenly you have two starters go on the IL and you're now trying to stretch out Cade Povich again. And it's way easier for a starter to transition to relief in season. It is way more difficult to do that in season where a reliever is suddenly getting stretched out
If
and
he's good enough, he'll, go down to Norfolk and
exactly.
mow
And
him down,
someone else will
and
get hurt or someone will be mediocre and need to go to the pen. I mean,
or you have to play a rainout game
I
and
had no problem how they
doubleheaders.
handled that on Monday. You know, I want to see Dean Kramer be better
Well, we're
now
talking about
moving forward,
16
but
guys starting games for them last year, and every team in the league averages 10 or 11. I mean, we're only up to
I
seven
mean,
or eight at this
eight.
point now, right?
We're just getting the tax. You know, it's Jackie Robinson Day, you know, this week, and they're already at eight starting pitchers. I mean, already at eight. So, and that's not to say that that same pace is going to continue, but
And
they're going
only
to be.
one Tommy John surgery, right?
Right, sure. So, I mean, it's brutal, and that's why you need as many guys as you can kind of manage on your 40-man roster and have in your organization. And as I said to you know, for all the talk about, you know, whether we're talking about Cade Povich or Brandon Young, guys like that, keep in mind they have Trey Gibson at AAA. They have Nestor Herman at AAA. They have Levi Wells at AAA. I am not saying that all of those guys are going to start games for them this year, but what I am saying
Two
is
of those
if
three
those
will.
guys pitch well, those guys could find themselves in the conversation as the year goes on. And not necessarily to replace, but maybe to replace somebody even. Maybe performance-wise, where you say, man, Trey Gibson's pitching his tail off. We've got to get this guy in the mix here in Baltimore and help us out. So if that happens, that's a good problem, right? For all the injuries that they've had so far, it'd be nice to have a couple situations, you know, Jeremiah Jackson, you know, he's playing a great second base. Well, what about Jackson Holliday? It's like, okay, what about Jackson Holliday? First of all, he's got to show he's healthy and ready to go, but there are opportunities to put Jeremiah Jackson at third base, or to your point, don't really want to, I don't think I'd necessarily want to see it, but he can play a corner outfield spot in a pinch. But the point is, he's playing well enough where you're starting to think about him in those terms. And that's a good thing. That's what you want. You want to have a situation where you're not just looking for someone, anyone to fill a spot in the lineup or a position on the field. You want to have options. You know, you want to have depth, not just inventory. Buck Showalter always said that, right? There's inventory, which, you know, you have inventory because you're not going to play with an empty roster. But is that depth, meaning guys that you can actually count on, guys that are going to make positive contributions for you? And Jeremiah Jackson's absolutely been that for them early on. And, you know, like I said, it's on the heels of him being one of those few guys that came up when they were playing out the string last year. And most people were at that point already paying attention to training camp and fake football in the preseason and all that. But he played well and he did a nice job for himself. And he put himself in position to go to spring training and win a job. And he was able to do that. And you look at him now, he's been one of their better players. You know, I'll say this, if he's going to swing the bat like he did Monday night, he's not going to be hitting eighth much longer. You might need to move him up a couple spots in the order, but it's been nice to see. And again, if you're going to be one of those teams, to your point, 92 games, 90 games, whatever it is, if they're going to be there
You're going to be a
contending,
buyer, not a seller, in
if
12
you're going to
weeks,
do
is what
all
I'm going to
that,
say.
you need different contributions. It can't just be Gunnar Henderson and Pete Alonso and Taylor Ward all year long. It's going to have to be other guys and hopefully some of the members of the young core. Yes. But I will also say, yeah, Jeremiah Jackson, just because he wasn't anointed that doesn't mean that he's not elevating his stature with the way that he's playing. And certainly a huge night for him on Monday. And again, I felt good for him in the sense that he had to feel really bad initially of what happened with hitting his manager in the dugout. So I thought that moment, again, the hug they had after the grand slam, he adds on the insurance with a second home run. Pretty cool night for Jeremiah Jackson and a very cool night for the Orioles getting a win. And like I said, two games above 500 for the first time since the end of 2024. So it speaks to them being off to a better start this year and just how terrible last year was.
Yeah, he says pretty cool night. Our friends at Farnan and Dermer know some hot nights are coming here this week. It's going to be in the 80s. Get your AC checked because It's that time of the year. I got the windows open, my kitty cat's on my lap in the middle of our programming here. We're going to be at GBMC on Friday, walking a mile in their shoes. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of folks. It's going to be a beautiful afternoon, 4 o'clock on the South Chapman at GBMC. I had a great conversation with Laura Clary, as well as other nurses from the SAFE program through the course of the year. It's a big, big event. Come on out and support that. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour this week on Thursday at Costas and Timonium. We will be at Coco's next Thursday, the 23rd, before the NFL draft. And then on the 1st of May, back at Pizza John's in Essex. And on the 7th of May, at Planet Fitness in Timonium, I'm lining up guests. I will have the Maryland Treasures scratch-offs to give away. Luke's going to be down at the ballpark on these beautiful 80-degree nights and 80-degree afternoons for baseball. And then the birds are getting out of town here this weekend as well. And man, we got Kentucky Derby in a couple of weeks, and the Preakness is a month away, and the draft is a week away. Luke, before I break here, I just want to switch topics for 1 minute. Do you have any late leaks on this Ravens branding thing, like Flying B? Like, do you have any prediction as to what they're trying? Because you're the fashion guy around here. You know, we did an hour on it last week, but I'm just trying to see, has there been a leak in any way that you know of?
Not that I've seen in the past. Like, I remember someone had tipped me off a couple years ago when they did the purple rising, the alternate helmet they had, right? Someone had told me that was coming,
The
but
kiss face, yes.
So, but this has been, I'm interested to see what it looks like. Frankly, I'm a little uneasy because honestly, I kind of like most of their branding as far as what their uniforms have looked like,
It
right? I
doesn't
mean,
need to be fixed. I would totally say that.
even the alternate uniforms, mustard pants aside, even the alternate uniforms, like for example, their color rush. I don't love the color rush, but relative to what a lot of the teams had for their color rush uniforms, I thought they were fine, right? In the same way, I was talking about the Orioles City Canucks. Relative to a lot of other teams, I'm not offended by them, right? They're fine. I can live with them. I said it to you the other day. I'd like this to be more subtle than anything, but I also look at
Oh, you're
purple
expecting
and
more of a
black
hammer. You don't
and
expect it to be a
birds.
slight change, right? You're expecting something more
Just,
dramatic.
I will
I'm
say
not,
it.
I'm not, I don't know. Like, I have
I
no
mean, I don't know.
thought
I don't
about
know. I mean,
it.
it's I put it this way. I am fully expecting a couple alternate uniforms at the very least that look very different. That's what I'm thinking. I'm just hoping when you're talking about the traditional, conventional home uniform and away uniform, your primary ones that you wear,
Let me get
I'm
my arms
hoping they're
around
not
this for a minute.
dramatically different.
They are done wearing the uniform they were wearing. Like, that's going to be the hard part for me to say, okay, you're not going to look like Jamal Lewis or Ray Lewis or Ed Reed
We don't
or
know that
even
yet, but
Lamar before. But Lamar doesn't look like Lamar because Lamar has worn the gold thing that's, Ray Lewis didn't get all that. Neither did Ed Reed. They were more of the black on the purple. It was more black and white and purple at that point. Not even the mustard pants that Justin Tucker got into or whenever 18, 17, 18, 19, whenever that happened. And you were really offended by that. I
that
thought the
was
color
2015, actually. And
that
remember
long
that they
ago.
were
Wow.
lousy that year. So
That's right. It was
it
when
almost
Flacco
felt
got hurt, right?
appropriate that team wore those. But no, I don't know. Let me be clear. I don't know. I'm hoping, my hope is that their purple jersey and their white jersey, their regular home and their regular away, I'm hoping that is not completely changed, that
Yeah, I'm
it's,
looking at those pictures again, just
just.
from on the sidelines of that, the purple with the gold pants. I don't know. I don't hate it, but I mean, I don't love it now that I'm looking at it again. I don't need them to wear it again. I hope whatever they put on looks great. That's all,
Sure. Well,
like
and
I.
I will say this, even if this trends more drastic change, if nothing else, absolutely please give us a number font that is still legible and readable. My biggest pet peeve with college football uniforms has been, they go for something that looks really cool up close. And then, practically speaking, when you're watching it on television or you're in the stadium, you can't read the numbers, and they're just, it's awful. So, again, we'll see. I'm hoping there are elements that stay the same. If they want to tweak the shoulder patches or things like that, or tweak the font slightly, whatever,
Yeah, the night
it's
they
fine.
wore the purple Kiss helmet, they wore the gold letters,
Yeah.
right? So, it doesn't, it feels gimmicky. It doesn't feel
Oh,
primary.
sure.
You
I
know what
mean,
I mean? Yeah.
there's always that. I mean, my goodness, you want to talk about gimmicky? I mean, look at the NBA on any given night where my it's supposed the term is uniform, right? That lends itself to the idea of consistency, and it's something recognizable, right? And everyone looks. But my biggest pet peeve about what the NBA has become uniform-wise is you'll tune in, and there are nights where you're not exactly sure which team is which in terms of what they're wearing, and
Oh,
that's just
it's
bad.
pajama
Like, that's
night
bad.
every
So
night. Yeah.
we'll see.
Well,
I'm
I just hope it
hoping
goes
for the
well. That's
best.
all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I and I'll say this, just like the City Connects. You look at young, I see younger Ravens fans on Instagram or social media. They're excited for this. I mean, they are. Players are excited for this. Doesn't mean it's going to be good. Doesn't mean I'm going to like them necessarily, but there are a lot of people excited for this. And like I said, I hope this is not a completely unrecognizable moving forward, but I also have seen Nike mess up enough
Yeah, I'm
uniforms
not
over the
buying the
years.
jerseys these days. I've moved past that point
Yeah,
in
oh
my
yeah. I
life
mean, I,
where,
you know, I
I've
mean,
got a
me
closet
neither,
full of the
but
old stuff that I like that means something to me, a Super Bowl ring and whatever. But I'm not,
we're gonna find
I
out.
don't know whether I'm gonna feel closer associated with it in sort of the way that the Orioles never get away from the bird.
Yeah.
Whether it's the cartoon bird or the ornithologically correct or the peacock bird, whatever, it's the bird. I don't know what Sashi Brown. I mean, again, this goes back to the earlier part of this when these executives hide from people like me when all I'm is like, I've been here 50 years, I've been on the air 35 years. All I have are questions. I'm not bringing a gun or a knife. I literally, on behalf of fans, explaining this in a way that's not all Johnny Bravo'd up the way Sashi and Moon and Chad are going to do that this week. I just hope whatever they put on looks doesn't look like their pajamas. That's all.
Yeah,
So.
I want to see something that's still recognizable. Like I said, number font can be tweaked a little bit. If you want to change the shield on the shoulder to go back to the original bird with the outstretched wings that they had the first few years, you want to do a couple things like that. You want to bring the Flying B logo back, like anything like that. Cool. To me, just I feel for a team that's only been around for 3 decades, they've built a pretty cool, recognizable brand in terms of like their uniforms and all that. That
There are
I
teams like
don't
the
know.
Falcons and the Eagles have taken their uniforms
Well,
in the worst direction.
although
They're not even good. The Jets play around with theirs all the time. I mean,
the
put on what
Eagles
Joe
haven't changed
Namath
theirs
did.
that much, but some of the other teams, yeah. I mean, the
But
Eagles.
there was that point where the Eagles and the Falcons, and I talked to Todd Radom, and I'll have him on Friday, that they all went with this sleek. It looked like it was all designed by the same person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
Yeah. I
that's
mean,
the part
there's.
of it that I hope. That doesn't look like corporate Raven, but then I think about how Sashi fits the suit. This is something that got homogenized, right? It's not going to look like one of these City Connect things. It's going to look like somebody with a suit in Ivy League got a hold of it. And I feel like it's going to look corporate, not going to look cool. You know what I mean? Like
We'll find out.
that's
I
how I
mean,
feel like if it's going to edge in a direction. I'm more, I'm hopeful, but I'm skeptical.
yeah, I think I'm in the same boat there. And look, the last thing you want is to put something out and then you're putting something else out
Look at
3 years from
Washington
now.
football team. They've had their chance to redo everything, and what they've come up with has been right.
That's
But
terrible.
Snyder was a part of that. Magic Johnson now, this other
It's
guy,
terrible
the
to the
guy that was
point.
drunk.
It's terrible to the point where they're now like leaning back into, they're not changing their name back, I don't think, despite what some fans want. But they're leaning back into what their uniforms used to look like, which compared to what they've trotted out there the last 3, 4 years, I can't
USC
really.
thing they have,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I mean, it's, we'll see. We'll find out. I mean, we're almost here. for that. I mean, anyone listening who doesn't care about uniforms just
No,
thinks,
but it's fine. I'm,
no,
this was a
no.
baseball segment. I just wanted
Oh,
to
it's
throw it
fine. It's
out.
just
That's all.
they think we're even bigger nerds than they
Well, the
previously
fact that we
thought.
talked
So.
about it at Fadley's the other day at length about how we feel like I have Oiler blue on here.
Sure.
What the Titans have done, which is basically take the Oiler jerseys and flop them
Yeah,
down on,
I'm
dude,
not a
it's
fan of that at
gross.
all.
It's
Yeah.
gross. Yeah. And I'm an Oiler guy. It's
And
gross.
it has nothing to do with the uniform itself. It's a great look. It's not their look. I mean, it's this, you're never going, just like every time I see to this day, and I didn't live it. I feel this way on behalf of my father and my grandparents,
And me.
where anytime I see the Indianapolis Colts trot out a throwback of any sort, that just, if you want to wear a throwback to the 1995 Colts, that's fine. But anything that they throw back with a nod to Johnny U or Lenny Moore or Raymond Berry or Art Donovan or whoever, that's just that's a hard no and
I mean,
offensive to
look at the
me.
Rams going to St. Louis and putting all the LA names on the in
It's
the middle of the dome that they walked out of to
so
go back to
weird.
LA. Like, creepy. I was thinking about that. I was making my coffee this morning, how creepy some of these billionaires are. So, at some point, Michael Arougheti will step up and be a part of the Oriole thing. But we did have some magic on Monday night. Luke and I have talked about that. We're going to be talking about the magic of the new uniforms as well as the Cleveland Guardians. There's a whole other brand switch
Another
there as
rebrand,
well. There you go. He is Luke. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive. Stay with us.